Scrooge, Santa, the Grinch, George, and Charlie Brown all offer their views on Christmas as Dr. Ray Bolin reviews Christmas film favorites, now on Probe.
This week we'll examine several classics of film and television that have become perennial Christmas favorites. We'll start with a review of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. The primary reason that the carol is still important is that Christmas has become a commercial disaster that tends to focus our attention on the material aspects of the season and neglect the spiritual and humanitarian dimensions. A Christmas Carol must be understood as the cry of a Victorian prophet sounding the warning of the evils of poverty. The settings in Dickens' stories illustrating the abysmal conditions in 19th century England have long been understood to be a valuable reminder of the social inequities during the Industrial Revolution. The film opens by contrasting the merry and cheerful lives of every man, woman, and child in England with the disgruntled and miserable life of Ebenezer Scrooge. Scrooge is a rich businessman who wants for nothing, and yet he cannot or will not enter the spirit of the season. At midnight on Christmas Eve, all of this will change as he is visited by the three ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. The ghost of Christmas past shows Scrooge his childhood school and friends. He remembers the time as a mix of joy because of his friends and confusion because his father refuses to participate in the season. It is here that he becomes hardened as a young man and turns to a life of greed. When the ghost of Christmas present comes, Scrooge is shown how other people are spending the evening. This is where he learns that Christmas may be enjoyed despite being poor, and that it's a time of opportunity for those who have material blessings to share with those who do not. Finally, when the ghost of Christmas future comes, Scrooge is shown the grave that awaits him. He inquires if one can change his ways and alter his destiny. Scrooge surmises that this must be possible, or the ghost would not be visiting him in the first place. Scrooge learns his lesson in the end and has what amounts to a conversion for Dickens. The film and story conversion amount to a humanitarian change of heart and are weak on the Christian emphasis, despite the presence of worship services and praying family. What we should take with us from the film is that we can learn from the past and appropriate it in the present for a better future. Likewise, we can use the Christmas season as an opportunity to focus on that which really matters, which for Christians is the birth of Jesus Christ.
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Dr. Ray Bolin. To receive your free copy of Todd Kappelman's transcript, Christmas Film Favorites, visit our website at probe.org. Again, that's probe.org. Have a blessed Christmas, and be sure to join us next time here on Probe.
Miracle on 34th Street, much like A Christmas Carol, is an example of the humanitarian variety of Christmas films. It opens during the Macy's annual Thanksgiving Day parade. The man who's been hired to play Santa is drunk, and the organizer, Mrs. Walker, is desperate to find a suitable stand-in. Fortunately, the real Santa, a.k.a. Kris Kringle, has been wandering the streets of New York and reluctantly agrees to help. He begins to work at Macy's as the store's Santa Claus and causes quite a commotion. Being the real Santa Claus, Kringle puts the children first and commercialism last. He's been instructed by the store manager to influence the children to ask their parents for toys that are in abundant supply and thus help to sell the store's surplus merchandise. Kringle laments the request and will have nothing to do with further commercializing the season. Instead, Kringle listens seriously to the children and sends their parents to rival department stores, if necessary, to secure the desired presents. This causes the store's manager and Mrs. Walker great concern about what Mr. Macy will do when he finds out. The customers couldn't be happier with the store, and it's considered a great humanitarian gesture on the part of Macy's to put the children ahead of profits. Other stores follow suit. There's a citywide, then nationwide movement to put customers and children ahead of the store's interests. There is a major plot twist when Kringle is brought to a competency hearing because he claims to be Santa Claus. His trial is front page news, and everyone anxiously follows the story to see if the court will find in favor of the existence of Santa Claus or rule that it's all been a commercial hoax. Mrs. Walker's daughter, Susan, has been watching the story unfold. The little girl's been raised by her divorced mother to accept nothing but the sober truth. No fairy tales, myths, or Santa. However, when the court finds that Santa actually exists, there's a new opportunity for both the girl and her mother to reconsider their skepticism. The mother willingly concedes the existence of Santa Claus, but the daughter is more demanding concerning that existence. The emphasis of the story is not Christian specifically, but rather humanitarian. The lesson is that the Christmas season can be enjoyed if people turn from commercialism and embrace their fellow man. As Christians, we should be happy that a classic such as this warns us against the pitfalls of materialism, yet cautious about adding too much by way of Christianizing the story. As we continue our survey of Christmas films, you will notice the difference between films such as Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which have a more humanitarian emphasis, and films like It's a Wonderful Life with a stronger Christian emphasis. The film we now consider, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, conveys more of the humanitarian message. The tale is set in Whoville, where the inhabitants are preparing for their Yuletide celebration. There are plenty of presents for the children, food of every conceivable kind, trees, fireplaces, and even roast beast. The Grinch, a villain with a twisted and defective spirit due to his tiny heart, lives in the mountains of Whoville. He's devising a scheme to steal Christmas from the townspeople by stealing their trees and gifts and food. The Grinch thinks that Christmas is somehow dependent on these things. If he steals them, the Whos will wake up Christmas morning and find that there is no Christmas. The Grinch pulls off the heist and returns to his mountain hideout with every tree, gift, and crumb of food from all the Who houses, only to discover a most startling surprise on Christmas morning. The Whos awaken and begin to sing songs despite having no presents or food. The Grinch cannot understand how Christmas can come without ribbons and packages, boxes and bows. He'd expected the Whos to cry, "All boo-hoo." Instead, he finds that Christmas doesn't come from a store. At this discovery, the Grinch's heart grows three sizes. He has seen the true meaning of Christmas. The extremely important message here is that Christmas does not come from a store, and we should not lose track of the real reason we celebrate. The season is about the Savior of the world, and we should celebrate this fact with fellow Christians and witness to those who are lost. We can learn from the Whovillians that Christmas can come without all the cultural bells and whistles. We need to be careful not to confuse the simple humanitarian message with the real message of Christmas. The Grinch has a change of heart, much like the change of heart experienced by Scrooge in A Christmas Carol and Mrs. Walker in A Miracle on 34th Street. The Christmas season is not a success just because we use it as an occasion for goodwill to our fellow men. But Christ said that he came that they might have life and have it abundantly. True abundant life and goodwill, which will last for eternity, are found in a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Keep this in mind and have a truly Merry Christmas. We're offering a list of Christmas films that may be enjoyed by the whole family. Today we'll consider the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life. This film has achieved cult status as the embodiment of why we should be thankful, as well as a reflection on the value of every individual, regardless of one's perceived worth. The film is a story about a young man named George Bailey who is saved from suicide by a guardian angel named Clarence. Early in the film, we see a heavenly discussion about the need to intervene in George's life. George's father, the owner and executive officer of Bailey Building and Loan, had suffered a stroke, and George had to assume his father's position. George gives up his dream to travel and go to college. Instead, he remains in Bedford Falls and marries a childhood acquaintance. He and his wife Mary are poor but extremely happy during the early years of their marriage. George's life becomes unbearable when, through no fault of his, the building and loan is in danger of a scandal and foreclosure. Considering his life insurance policy, he concludes that he would be better off dead than alive. The dramatic action of the film shifts when Clarence, George's guardian angel, rescues him from his suicide attempt. In response to George's statement that everyone would be better off if he were dead, Clarence offers George a guided tour of what Bedford Falls would be like if he'd never been born. George makes the startling discovery about a druggist he worked for when he was a young boy. George had prevented Gower from making a deadly mistake in filling a prescription that would have killed the patient. But since George was not there to prevent the accident, the druggist spent 20 years in prison and became an alcoholic. George then learns that since he had not saved his brother from drowning when they were young, his brother wasn't alive to save other soldiers in World War II. Mary has become an old maid, and his children were never born. The town isn't called Bedford Falls, but Pottersville, after George's arch rival and evil banker, Mr. Potter. The entire town, from the druggist to the girl next door, from the saloon keeper to the librarian, is different because George was never born. The idea that all men have a purpose can only be understood considering a world created by a God where everyone and everything has a purpose. Frank Capra's classic, It's a Wonderful Life, serves as a reminder this Christmas season that God puts every person here for a purpose. It truly is a wonderful life. We conclude our series on films and television specials of the Christmas season with what many believe to be one of the most overtly Christian program in the genre, A Charlie Brown Christmas. Some of these films have a merely humanitarian theme, and others have a classic Christian interpretation of Christmas. We've mentioned that there's nothing wrong with the humanitarian emphasis, but Christians should understand the finer distinctions between the two renderings of the meaning of Christmas. A Charlie Brown Christmas opens with Charlie Brown in his usual state of mild depression, searching for the true meaning of Christmas. He proclaims to Lucy that it just doesn't feel like Christmas, and he doesn't understand it. Lucy charges him 5 cents and tells him nothing of any value. Her solution is a naturalistic approach with a focus on monetary gain. Charlie Brown's little sister Sally proclaims that all she wants for Christmas is everything that's coming to her. She represents the voice of all who equate Christmas with getting presents. It's sad when a child believes this about Christmas. It's tragic when an adult holds the same view. Lucy announces that we all know that Christmas is a big commercial racket. Charlie Brown is put in charge of the Christmas play and must find an appropriate Christmas tree. In true Charlie Brown fashion, he selects a pitiful specimen that is losing all its needles and cannot support itself. The tree becomes a symbol for Charlie Brown and the limp and pathetic status of our contemporary celebration of Christmas. Something's gone terribly wrong. Lucy's jaded expectations and Sally's crass materialism have only led Charlie Brown to a deeper state of depression. This leads to his final cry for someone who knows the true meaning of Christmas to come forward. Linus, the blanket introvert virtuoso, enters and assumes center stage. As the existential hero of the story, he knows the true meaning of Christmas. He tells Charlie Brown that he will now give an account of what Christmas means. In a direct quotation from Luke 2:10-11, Linus tells him of the angel's announcement concerning the birth of baby Jesus. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And that's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. Finally, there's a clear and unmistakable account of the true meaning of Christmas. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.